Right, now it's 2 minutes past, so we shall get started. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to what promises to be another excellent and enthralling entry into our webinar series. Join us today for a dynamic and data-driven session hosted with one of our key partners, HackerOne, exploring how AI, attacker economics, and evolving risk priorities are reshaping cybersecurity strategies in 2025. HackerOne are trusted by companies such as GitHub, Uber, and the Department of Defense, and they include services such as bug bounty programs, pen testing, vulnerability disclosures, and AI red teaming. This session is being recorded and will be available on our website later. We also have a Q&A function, so please feel free to ask questions, and we will answer those at the end of the webinar. If we don't get a chance to answer all the questions at the end of the webinar, we will take those offline and answer them as well. So my name is Adam Coverdale. I'm a solutions architect here at Integrity 360, and I'm also joined today by Naz, the lead product marketing manager at HackerOne. Naz holds an MA, an MSc in cybersecurity and international relations. Her passion for market, product, and customer research helps her transform intricate data into actionable intelligence. Since 2018, Naz has been at the forefront of innovative security startups, focusing on breach and attack simulations, crowdsourced security testing, and pen test as a service approaches. Most recently, she's been focused on AI red teaming, helping organizations build secure, trustworthy, and resilient AI systems at scale, and is the architect of the security report, Security, the Age of AI Autonomy, being discussed today. So hi, Naz, welcome.
Hi, Adam. Super excited to be here.
Excellent. The first thing we're going to do today is launch a quick poll to understand where organizations are in their AI adoption journey. So, Rebecca, could you launch the poll, please?
Yeah, we're going to be talking a lot about AI today, and I'm interested in seeing the answers to this question. It's going to hopefully help us drive some of the insights we're going to share.
Yeah, we'll briefly chat at the end of the poll. We'll run it for another couple of moments. We've got 10 out of 27 participants at the moment, and we'll just have a quick overview of what people are doing in their organizations. Okay, I think that's given everybody enough time. Or should we give it another 30 seconds? Excellent. So let's share the results. So, with AI adoption and organizations within AI adoption, they're actively implementing across AI across all their operations. So, quite a big percentage exploring AI projects. I think, Naz, you'd probably say that that's probably the most common. Inside of
100%.
comes today. No plans to adopt AI at this stage. So is that a case of you not adopting it as part of your business or processes, or is it a case of you're not adopting it for your own requirements inside your organization to obviously either speed up economic speed up economies and further help with resource augmentation, as it were, inside the organization. So quite an interesting one, but it's kind of what we're looking to see at the moment, isn't it, Naz?
Yeah, 100%. And this is actually very much aligned with what we're going to be sharing. And I think people who are exploring pilot projects and experimenting with it or implementing it gonna take away a lot of practical insights as the conversation goes. So that's good that there's an overlap.
Cool, excellent. So I'll just start moving on to the next slide and the security snapshot of 2025.
Perfect. Yeah, I just wanted to start this slide to give a snapshot of 2025 security insights, but also introduce the report we're going to be talking about a little bit. So the data we're going to be presenting today, it's coming from HackerOne's Hacker-Powered Security Report. So this is industry's comprehensive signal on where vulnerabilities are emerging and how attackers are shifting focus. And this year we're on ninth edition. So this means we've been releasing, publishing this report for the last 9 years, which is fascinating. And what sets us apart from other research out there is that it's built on proprietary platform data. So this year we looked at almost 600,000 vulnerability reports from real customer environments across pretty much every major industry. And this represents the world's largest offensive data set of its kind. And our analysis this year also included independent surveys of almost 2,000 active security researchers on HackerOne platform and 100 enterprise security leaders. So everything we'll share today is going to be very data-backed. So coming back to the snapshots, so we observed three key takeaways that define 2025. The first one is the rise of the bionic hacker. This is also the title of our report. And this comes from the fact that nearly 70% of researchers we surveyed now use AI in their workflows. So LLMs for reconnaissance, code review, report writing. So we're going to talk a little bit more about these trends in a bit. The second trend is that systemic risks are the new battleground. So authorization failures keep climbing. And we also saw that commodity bugs have been flattened. The data we're going to be looking and talking about today tells us that attackers are pretty much going after design and access flows and not just input fields. We'll dive into that in a bit. And the last trend I want to cover here is that, and this goes without saying, but AI is the fastest growing attack surface, and this is aligned with all responses as well. Our report showed us that valid AI vulnerability reports jumped 3 times year over year, and vulnerability categories like prompt injection exploded. And we're going to dissect this in a bit, but as a trend, it's very telling, and it sets the ground for a lot of our customers and listeners right now. Their investments in this year and looking ahead. So yeah, we'll build the conversation around these key takeaways, and we can move on to the next slide, Adam.
Yeah. So the first we're going to look at is the shifts. So let's look at the hard data, what changed in vulnerability reports and the payouts this year, and what are the long-term trends we can't afford to ignore.
Perfect. Let's get going.
So in the report, it captures a massive increase in the number of submissions that have been reported for within AI reports. Can you talk a little bit more about what you found and you know what you see as that change between last year and this year?
Yes, so over just the past year, valid AI-related vulnerabilities submitted by human researchers on our platform rose over 200%. So it just tells us that these risks are not theoretical anymore. They're real, exploitable flaws being found and validated in production systems. And at the same time, we observed that total rewards paid for AI vulnerabilities grew over 300%. This is another thing that tells us that organizations aren't just finding these issues, they are incentivizing them, they're valuing them, and they're willing to put money in them. So they recognize that AI assets now, things like they recognize that AI assets now touch things like customer data, automation pipelines, business logic, and the risk is no longer confined to a research and development lab. It's in live products. And last thing I'll cover here is the program behavior. We saw 270% increase in programs that now include AI systems in scope. So these are things, everything from LLM integrations and chatbots to AI-driven assistance or pilot projects. And we saw that CISOs or security leaders are treating now AI as critical infrastructure and opening those systems to testing before attackers do. And that's absolutely a trend we want to see more of. And all of this stuff is just confirms that AI has officially became the fastest expanding attack surface. So Adam, I'm actually curious to hear your take on these figures as well. If you know AI is scaling this fast, where do you think leaders need to move fastest to keep up? And if you have any other insights to share here.
Yeah, so two parts to that. I think the first part is that we're seeing organizations take AI more seriously and the security footprint that AI represents more seriously, whether they use that within their customer base, or for products and services to their customers, or whether they use it internally to help, either build out their resources or to make things easier and quicker for them. I think that they're basically taking it more seriously now, and so they're putting more effort into actually, right, okay, well, how does it affect us as a business and organization? And that business, that effect goes all the way up. So, as soon as you put something new risk in there, that risk profile goes across the entire business. So we're seeing more organizations actually try and take a stance in it, but also look to implement it in a more structured way as well. So not just saying, oh, we're just going to do this, or we'll just launch Copilot, or we'll just bring ChatGPT or an agentic AI in. We're actually going to try and understand what the risks are, and then we know what the benefits are, but what the risks are within that as well. But I also think we need to look at, or where leaders need to look, is understanding how much of that business impact it could cause, and where that it's not just within IT or just within security. That's one part of it, but how much of the overall business could be impacted by a security flaw or vulnerability, or something that is found within the AI itself, and how that's been implemented inside an organization. And I think that's going to be that's like a key theme running throughout this presentation, would be to understand and, like, bring the C-suite in, and we'll touch upon that later on as well.
Yeah, 100%. And what one thing you said is actually speaks to me a lot. Threat modeling comes into play when you're designing these AI testing strategies, and in particular when we're doing threat modeling exercises. One question that is part of the conversation is we're asking our customers, organizations, what is your nightmare scenario? So what you said is absolutely true, that the risks needs to be mapped and understood, and also its implications, and it should just like be fed into your testing strategies as you as organizations continue implementing. So that was really point on.
Excellent. So we're just going to move on now to what we consider the year-on-year vulnerability trends. So this is a bit of a split and understanding, right, what the rewards are, what the valid reports are, how they've gone up and down across that. There's been some systemic flaws rising, some commodity bugs failing. How should we read these signals within these trends?
So what we're seeing here is really a picture of how the attacker mindset has evolved in the last year, for years, and we're going to see it in the next slide when we look at the 5-year trends. But for years, most programs lived and died by XSS and SQL injection. And here you can see that it's starting to fade. Cross-site scripting is down. There are fewer valid reports and less in rewards. And this sounds like good news, but really, I think it's just maturity. Those are the flaws automation now catches before humans ever touch them. And where it gets more interesting is the bottom half of this chart. And again, this is a condensed chart in the report. We have a much longer one. But in the bottom half of this chart, we see things like improper access control, IDOR. These are the plumbing flaws in modern systems, and they're surging. So IDOR alone is up, payouts are up as well. And that's what happens when every app becomes a web of APIs, microservices, third-party integrations. And the more organizations connect things, the more seams we expose. And I guess the key takeaway in this table is that commodity bugs are being automated away, and systemic flaws are where the real exposure and opportunity now lives. And how do these trends align with what you're seeing in customer programs right now, Adam? It's good to get your practitioner and hands-on perspective in what we're seeing here.
Yeah, see, we see with things like cross-site scripting, that's been around for years, and it's been part of the vulnerability market for years as well. And now vulnerabilities are becoming more and more more and more commonplace, but they're also basically being automated more and more as well. So you have more automated systems. You've now got things like continuous threat exposure management that are continuously finding vulnerabilities and being able to then bring them to the top and remediate them. But things like you said, the improper access control and the IDOR, it's finding a way of how do we map that successfully, and how do we map it automatically, and you can do it continuously. And as you say, as applications become more and more complex, and there's more and more connectivity to other third-party resources and sources, how do we understand that those are secure? And so the traditional sort of like web app scanning and API scanning works to a certain point, but again, that's still quite monotonous, and also quite human-led as well. So it's understand, okay, how can this, how can AI help in that as well, but also what the attackers are doing to leverage that, and how they're using AI to be able to understand it, and understand and find vulnerabilities and flaws within that logic. Because at the end of the day, it's not a vulnerability, it's just a flaw in logic, and that flaw then has to be programmed out. So it obviously that takes time as well. So having processes and organizations in place to actually that understand this then allows us to go back and feed that into the feedback loop of the CI/CD pipeline when building the applications out as well.
Exactly. And when you're structuring your security testing programs, again, like identifying those points where automation can help and where you need to bring in more human testing is super helpful. And we use that in the customer conversations. We use this data to help shape those conversations to optimize program results and also budget investments. So yeah, I totally agree.
Okay, awesome. So looking over the last 5 years again, this gives you a bit of a trend as to what's actually happening over those 5 years. So as we can see, like cross-site scripting is still quite high, but as we say, it's matured out now where automation could take care of quite a lot of it, in that sense. For things like misconfigurations, things like insecure the IDOs, privilege escalation, improper access control, what's the real signal here? What do how do you interpret these results from the last 5 years?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting graph. And what we're seeing here is structural persistence. The same classes of vulnerabilities are, like you said, resurfacing year after year, even as tools and frameworks evolve. If we take authorization, that's still the clearest signal. Both IDOR and improper access control have climbed sharply across the 5-year window. And this just shows that, like you said, distributed systems, more APIs, microservices, and identity layers, the more complex those access seams become, and the complexity is now the attacker's favorite target because that pays well from a security researcher perspective, but also from an attacker's perspective. Then we see design level flaws like secure design principle violations and business logic errors are also creeping up. That is important because it means attackers are shifting toward logic and workflow abuse, and these are areas automation doesn't cover well. It requires contextualization. It requires human ingenuity. And in contrast, like we already mentioned, excesses in injection have almost flattened, and we've largely automated defenses here, and payouts are down because they're becoming commodity. And the last thing I'll mention here, what's growing underneath, and that is misconfigurations and identity link issues. Misconfigurations, especially, is like on a steady, steep, and they're also heavy in impact. And each misstep now connects directly to privilege escalation or data exposure. So I guess the takeaway in these figures is that we can't really say that things are getting worse. It's more about the fact that we've reached the point where the easy flaws are solved and the hard flaws are human. And these are, design, access, and identity problems. And those are the ones, I guess, the security leaders, program managers need to focus on and design strategies around today. I guess you provided a bit of a commentary, but I'm still curious to hear if these long-term patterns line up with what you're seeing from customers, what you're hearing in field conversations, Adam.
I definitely think misconfigurations is one of them. And we can see that it's actually trended up high year on year, basically from 2021. And I think as systems become more complex, As the flood of cloud-based services become more complex as well, and more services are offered in cloud and cloud native, I think the advent of misconfigurations, only takes one check of a box, basically, or one mischeck of a box, to misconfigure something to allow it open access, whether that be privileged access into a data store or things like that, and also security tooling is getting more complex as well. So basically, looking at understanding, okay, what's the baseline for a secure configuration? There's always three different ways to actually configure something and to do something. What's the best way? What's the baseline? And because every organization is different and how they want it configured is going to be different. There's no real, like, okay, hard and fast way. This is what our baseline is. And I suppose that's where frameworks are in place in order to say you should have, X, Y, and Z. So CIS benchmarks, other different frameworks are available. But it's a case of understanding what those misconfigurations are and routinely trying to identify those configurations. And again, that's either through bug bounty programs, through disclosure programs, having somebody else external to look and validate those configurations. And that, I suppose, that's the same thing with the IDOR and the improper access, understanding, okay, what access should be given. So again, it needs to go back to the business as like, okay, types of documentation. Do we know what access needs to be given? Are we working on the proviso of least privileged access? So are we, trying to put that into our model, and zero trust from the very beginning of any platform or any the solution that we're designing or deploying for in our organization, and then going from there. So I think I think customers are now trying to look and understand, okay, how do we, design it from the ground up as secure? And obviously, when we can't design it from the ground up, how do we ensure that there is security in that first instance?
That's so true. And once they design it from the ground up, it's also the nurturing and optimizations also come into play, and that's where data like this becomes very helpful in terms of seeing the evolution and making sure your program is keeping up.
Awesome. So now we've seen some of the data. Let's talk about what it looks like on the ground. So from enterprise programs to hackers to partners building tools, and understanding a bit more about that in the environment. So with the AI gold rush, there are new risks and new focus. As we can see here, the actual prompt inspection is massively increased from last year to this year. Things like the sensitive information disclosure, and I think that's probably one thing that organizations are probably more vulnerable to, or more keen on understanding how is our information, going to be disclosed. So are we looking at local LLMs? Are we looking at, if we're saying ChatGPT, what's the scope of information leakage outside of that? Because it might not be a security flaw, it might be by design in that respect. So it would be good to get an understanding on, what you're seeing and what the report has seen.
That's really true. And every organization pretty much right now is racing to integrate LLMs, AI copilots, agentic tools across their environment. And like you mentioned, that rush brings its own set of growing pains and challenges and new risks and bug classes. And the data here in this graph shows that attackers and security researchers on HackerOne platform are moving fast to explore how these systems behave under stress. And when we look at the trends, we're seeing a huge shift in focus to vulnerabilities that are unique to how AI interprets and executes instructions. In particular, like you called out, prompt injection has become the poster child for this new risk surface. It's not just a new bug. It's a fundamental issue of control and trust. And when we look at a year-over-year change, it's just skyrocketed. The change in the report volume between 2024 and 2025 is 540%. That is massive. And by prompt injection, what we mean here is that, so this represents when a model is tricked into revealing or executing something it shouldn't, the consequences now ripple into things like privacy, automation, and even data governance. And these are the risks that can carry a breach into an AI breach into headlines from an organization's perspective. And what's really interesting here is how quickly the hacker community has adapted to this new surface. Within just a year, a majority of researchers are now actively testing AI systems. And this table and what we're going to discuss in the next table is just like it's showing that the attack surface is growing. There are so many new skills to upskill on. There's so much AI specific tooling that helps the researchers push boundaries of what secure development means in this new ecosystem. And the figures that we see here really should force all organizations to rethink about validation, authorization, and even the intent itself when they're thinking about AI bug classes and taxonomies and the policies that they design.
So with the last slide, it shows us obviously the why. This one here shows us, who. So basically, who's using this, AI? Who's, why are these trends coming about in this instance? So who's behind the sort of the data, as it were? If we could go and delve a little bit more into that detail.
Yeah, so I really like all of the data in this slide. It was one of the most fascinating shifts we observed as we were building the research. It just shows how agile and adaptive hacker and researcher community is in terms of responding to AI, and they're just adapting probably faster than most enterprise teams. More than half of researchers are now upskilling in AI and machine learning security, and a huge portion are already testing AI systems in real life. They're not waiting for frameworks or standards to catch up. They're experimenting, learning, and building AI testing playbooks as they go. And you could say that this is the moment where the bionic hacker stops being an emerging idea and becomes reality. That's why we wanted to use that as a report title, because what we see is really researchers using AI to test AI, and they're combining human creativity with machine speed, and that's what bionic hacker really represents. And another thing that's driving this shift that we also observe here is the emergence of Model Context Protocol, MCP. And this basically lets LLMs connect to tools and data in structured real-time ways. And that's made testing and exploitation a lot more practical. So we're not just seeing more testing, we're seeing better testing, faster cycles, and more nuanced findings around how these systems behave in wild. And yeah, I guess like my recap of this slide is AI security is really becoming a core competency, and this is going to have implications for offensive researchers, but also for defenders too. So it's really interesting to see all of this in one place. But Adam, how do you, there are a lot of new skills mentioned here, and these are growing. How do you see organizations responding to these new skill sets and the growing talent gap that comes with the emergence of these new skill sets? Any insights to share from your conversations?
So on that, there's, just a takeaway from this is that obviously researchers and security researchers are using these tools to actually implement their research, but at the same time, threat actors are using these tools to basically try and to try and leverage AI to build out hacker tool sets to compromise people as well and compromise organizations. So that's one key takeaway that there's still a balance between the two, of that in. What we're seeing is that more organizations are looking for AI specific whether it's on the security front or whether it's on the on the test and development or the basically the coding front. as well. As part of our Integrity 360, we have a Connect 360 resource augmentation practice within the business, and we're starting to see more traction in organizations coming to us and asking for AI resource augmentation. Again, whether that is within the research field, whether that is within the code base and development field, so because they want to actually put agentic AIs within their chatbot AIs within their toolings for their customer base, or they want to start using it, or they basically want us to start looking at okay, how can we securely deploy Microsoft Copilot or ChatGPT within just picking on those two within our environment to use as a resource within our organization to negate the risk of information disclosure, or or basically prompts, as you, I think disclosure prompts. So it's sort of like we're starting to see more of an uptick. That I think that market is very shallow at the moment. I have seen when you look on LinkedIn, you look on AI engineers, they are commanding a very premium price and premium salaries for those type of positions and type of jobs. Now, whether there is a whether they have the depth of knowledge, because again, it's so new. So it's like, how does one become an AI engineer or an AI developer or that sort of thing? I think it's going to be something that the market is going to then be have to catch up, and they're going to have to pay those commanding salaries because the talent pool is quite small still in that respect.
Or just like you said, they need to bring in organizations that can be the extension of their
Yes.
security teams and help them with these with giving them an extra hand, because like you said, I think everything is moving so fast when it comes to these new technologies and skill sets, and I think no internal team on its own will be able to just like address everything and be the expert of everything on their own. So that's why bringing in organizations like yours and mine really makes a big difference.
Yeah, and I think that security as a whole in cybersecurity in IT has always been a very fast moving and very fast paced environment. But with the advent of AI, it's just seemed to have massively, somebody's put a rocket ship, strapped a rocket ship to it and accelerated it, and it's then trying to keep up with that pace as well. And as AI models and LLMs evolve and mature even more, it's then understanding what that impact is across those as well. So but moving on from that, the how we use AI in hacking, this sort of slide represents what we're actually is becoming part of the hacker toolkit. What stands out most to you about researchers and and actually using AI in their day-to-day work?
Yeah, so with this question in our survey, we wanted to get some specific answers around, how the security researchers are embedding AI in their day-to-day rhythm. And what we're seeing here is that AI is already part of how they work. Almost 70% of hackers that we surveyed stated that they now use AI tools in their workflows, and not just to find bugs directly, but to streamline the entire process on the recon side for triage, report writing, even summarizing data. So they're using LLMs the same way enterprises use them to move faster, sharpen insights, and eliminate repetitive work, because these people, they value their time a lot, and many prefer web-based models for convenience, while others are training or hosting local ones for privacy and control concerns. And that mix really tells us AI is becoming an ecosystem shaped to each researcher's style and scope, but it's becoming really a core part of their toolkit. And then key takeaway here is that human researchers are not being replaced by AI, but all of the results and all of our conversations that shaped up the report shows that they're being amplified by it. And this is the again, like going back to the title, it's the foundation of the Bionic Hacker, humans and AI working together to find vulnerabilities faster and smarter than either could alone. But Adam, from your side, when you're talking to customers who are trying to build or modernize their testing programs, do you see them starting to adopt this kind of augmented AI-assisted approach on the on in terms of more like operationalize I cannot AI
Operationalizing.
AI, yeah, operationalizing use of AI on the security side as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think for things like monotonous tasks that, like you say, report writing is one of those monotonous tasks that you can feed data into it and then it can produce your report. You can tailor and tweak that report without having to spend days going through line by line. You still have to verify the information that's coming out of it, but at the end of the day, the bulk of that information is not going to change. An AI is significantly advanced enough to be able to not have to worry about it too much because of the information you're feeding into it. So it's not like you're just asking it a question and it comes up with three different random answers. So a lot of it is it is a case of those monotonous tasks, those tasks that are taking a long time to do that we can basically rinse and repeat. We're seeing more of that, but also about just tasks that are for a human, it just takes, you have to click through this, you've got to do that, you've got to do this, where it's like step-by-step processing and using AI to help automate some of those processes. And like, how do we automate it? What can we create a script that then automates this process, bringing three different systems together so that we can automate that process? And then that's something that we can then obviously expand upon and evolve and grow out and mature with ourselves. And it's one of the things that as an organization ourselves, we're looking at that inside our operational part of our organizations to understand, okay, how can we leverage AI within our organization? What can we do? There's a lot of tasks that a lot of people behind the scenes when we're delivering services to customers, that how can we actually operationalize that and make that more efficient? And also, how can we do that so that we can do the same thing repeatable with all of our customers over and over and over and over again, but that gives us the capability to evolve it and mature it over time as well. So I think we're seeing a lot more of it, of people pushing those sort of boundaries, but at the same time, we've got to understand, okay, well, where's the risk with pushing those boundaries as well? So like you say, we're not at the luxury where we can just shove it into production and away it goes. We have to then look at understanding of what we're doing. But even for me, it's like for doing research and for bringing information together and looking, we work with lots of different technologies, and understanding those technologies, you can't be an SME in every single area of cybersecurity. So having that sort of like, informational database on hand to be able to provide you with some of that information that you can then go off, check, yeah, and verify, and then bring into whatever workflows you're using. So to move on from that, what's next? We've looked at the shifts and we've seen how they play out in practice. But what deserves our attention in 2026 and beyond? It would be good to get an understanding of what the big picture, the priorities, the future's areas of focus. Now, according to some of these stats, sector by sector, this when I looked at this previously, one of the things that really stuck out to me was retail and e-commerce. Now, bearing in mind that some of the biggest hacks we've had in the last, I would say not even 3 year, I would say the last 6 months, with like Co-op, M&S, that sort of thing. Retail and e-commerce is a massive, massive sector, and as you can see, it's actually grown quite exponentially within that. Where are attackers focusing their efforts? And more importantly, why are they focusing those efforts in those areas?
Yeah, so what we're seeing in these figures is really the economics of security in action. And this chart looks at severity concentration across industries in 2025 data. And like you said, retail and e-commerce topped the list with almost 40% of findings classified as critical or high. That's a That's a crazy high number, and it's followed by telecoms and software. And these figures really tell us where attackers are seeing the highest ROI for their efforts. If one industry is consistently delivering higher payouts and higher impact findings, researchers also naturally are drawn to focus on these sectors as well. And for security leaders, that means risk prioritization needs to be industry specific. So retail will look very different from healthcare or government in terms of attacker incentives. And we actually dig deeper into some of these key industries at the final section of our report and reveal some key vulnerability trends based on our payload analysis and give some recommendations in detail. But one layer I want to talk about here as I'm wrapping up is defense maturity. So in industries that apply layered testing, and this goes to or in, include combining things like pen tests, bug bounty programs, vulnerability disclosure programs, we actually see the risk curve bend. And our data shows that 65% of organizations using a defense-in-depth approach reported fewer high-severity issues year-over-year. So while attacker-focused clusters around high-velocity industries, the real differentiator for a lot of organizations out there is how quickly those industries operationalize learning. And retail and software may take more hits. Actor groups like Scattered Spider are always going to be out there, but these industries are also the ones iterating fastest on remediation and preventions, and that's really the security leader takeaway. You can't change where your industry sits on this chart overnight, but you can change your maturity curve by designing your programs in the most optimized, effective way. But Adam, from your perspective, when you're working with clients across various different industries, do you see a similar maturity gap and similar defense maturity evolving over time based on, what's happening in from the attacker's perspective?
Yeah, definitely. I think, and actually, with governments obviously being one of the lowest, I think in general governments are behemoths. They move very, very slowly, and quite often the heads of those organizations have a static way of looking at things. That obviously they're not the bleeding edge of technology or innovation in the respective getting out there inside their environments, which hopefully is starting to change. I think those areas that like retail and financial services that hackers or threat actors are actively targeting are always going to be high, because they are basically, the lighthouses, to say, I'm over here, come get me, sort of thing. Because at the end of the day, that has a big financial impact and potentially a big financial gain for a threat actor. And so I think those areas have had to mature their defense in depth strategies and their layering approach. And also, when it comes to things like the retail sector, if you can be innovative, if you've got solutions and products out there that basically make it easier for customers to consume your services, you're going to basically put a lot of effort. And this is where it goes back all the way through the presentation about organizations using AI to enhance their services for their customers. If they can do that and make it easier for their customers to interact with their services and to consume their services, they're still going to be, they're going to be a target, but they're also going to push up the maturity level of how they do their testing and how they do their vulnerability and their bounties and that sort of thing. And obviously those payouts that should then be higher within those industries as well. So yeah, that from what we see with customers in those sectors that we work with, that that maturity sort of scaling seems to be quite prevalent and quite on point. And just lastly, to wrap things up within the presentation. So I hope everybody has enjoyed that. And we have some questions, and we'll come onto those in a few minutes. If you had a recommendation, one move security leaders should make within the next 12 months, what would it be? My recommendation would be to bring in the C-level and the C-suite, and make the conversation across the entire business. It's not just a security tool. It's not just, it doesn't just have a security impact. It has a full business impact. If you want to adopt AI in any form, Whether it be agentic AIs, whether it be just using, Copilot or AI within your organization or for your customer base to bring it level as a put it as a business risk and bring it and understand what those risks are, what those rewards are, and then use solutions like HackerOne to identify, and to basically go out there and actually and be proactive in your identification so that you're not on the back foot as you're looking to implement these models. Naz?
Yeah, I think my recommendation will be very much along the similar lines as yours. I think all of our conversations in the report data suggest that AI shouldn't be treated as a side experiment, and it should be brought into the day-to-day rhythm of any security program and also innovation strategy. So that means testing, validating, and automating around AI systems organizations rely on. And this includes chatbots, copilots, data-driven integrations, MCP servers. They've become already a part of any organization's attack surface, and attackers are already testing them. So the leading organizations we're seeing aren't waiting for the perfect AI policy. They're getting hands-on. They're bringing AI into the conversations on the board level, like you were saying. They're layering AI into their workflows to accelerate things like discovery, triage, mitigation, and blending automation with human judgment. Yeah, I guess for me, the lesson is really that this kind of augmentation is essential, and it's already part of our defenders' work, and where attackers upskill. And the one move, I guess, for the next 12 months is really should be around building AI into your defense strategy at the same pace as attackers build it into theirs.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for that, Naz. Before we do the questions, we do have a couple of upcoming webinars, one about PCI in Amsterdam Unpacked, and one about building cyber resilient workforces. So feel free to register using the QR code that's on the screen, and you will see that in the presentation as well. So now just moving on to the Q&A. We've got a couple of questions from some of our attendees here. The first one is, when you talk about AI specific vulnerabilities, what does that actually look like in practice?
So we actually covered some of the bug classes, but if you look at AI-related vulnerability reports on HackerOne today, they don't always look like traditional web app or API bugs. They're more than often behavioral. And one example from this year involved a researcher who discovered what we call an invisible prompt injection. So this is essentially hiding malicious instructions against Unicode characters that an AI system could interpret as a trusted input. It looked harmless to the human eye, but to the model, it was a hidden command. And in another case that I can recall, was a case where a researcher used training data poisoning through ASCII encoding. So this is another common type. It's pretty much about getting the AI to encode or decode a message and unknowingly repeat inappropriate or manipulated content. And both of these reports I mentioned were technically fascinating because they highlight how AI systems can be exploited not by breaking the code, but by bending the language or the logic of how the model thinks. And both of these reports are actually disclosed on our Hacktivity side of things. So that's where we share sometimes redacted, sometimes unredacted disclosed vulnerabilities. But yeah, I always like referring to those two when I'm talking about AI specific vulnerabilities. And yeah, it's like just to reiterate, the reason I find them fascinating is the levels you can go in terms of probing the logic and trust boundaries and context itself is really so interesting and so different than anything we've seen before.
Excellent.
Anything
Thank
on
you.
your end, Adam? Anything?
I think for us it's more things like Copilot focused and ChatGPT. So a lot of it is like information overexposure within that. So again, it's not an actual vulnerability or security flaw. It's more about, okay, how do we implement it in such a way that we're still protected within our data? And like you say, it's those logic those logic flaws. It's a case of like, how can we, we're tricking the AI chatbot or whatever to basically give up more sensitive information, sensitive data. So we're seeing a lot more about, especially with the advent of Copilot and Microsoft bundling it in with a lot of their licensing. How do we implement that in a safe and secure manner without actually being able to give third parties or anybody on the internet access to our data in that respect? So thanks very much for that. Another one that somebody's asked is, what stood out for you most in this year's data? Has there been anything that has really sort of like think, oh, actually that's quite different to what we thought, or this is like, or has everything been in a line of what you would think was going to happen?
So, honestly, I saw this question before while we were talking, and I decided to share a fun fact rather than a key takeaway. But I think what the one data that stood out the most to me was that the record high bounty payouts, which was 81 million this year. That's a in insane number, and it just shows the volume and level of seriousness on the organization side in terms of how much they reward bounty programs. But yeah, as I said, I decided to share an anecdote from the research collection, because I think it has some practical implications for listeners. And this is an anecdote from the researcher survey. So we released this survey to thousands of security researchers through our platform, through an integrated third-party app. And in the survey, some of the fields allowed open-ended responses, just like any survey. And when we were going through the survey results, we immediately flagged some anomalies in the responses, because we started seeing some unusual characters, bits of encoded script, and some stuff looked like malformed markup. And at first, we thought it was a noise, until we realized a handful of researchers were actually trying to hack the survey itself. So they were injecting payloads directly into the response fields, and these were things like test scripts and prompt injection attempts. And this was purely out of curiosity, but they were just trying to see if they could trigger a reaction from the platform itself or connected apps. And it just And they were not wrong, because if those payloads hadn't been sandboxed or properly sanitized, they could have been executed by an internal model we were running these research on and could have triggered unintended actions. And we see examples of breaches like that in the real world as well. So yeah, I just wanted to share that small story. It's really a powerful reminder that, with the age of AI, every input is an attack surface. And with that mindset, questioning, testing, and validating everything is exactly what keeps the organizations one step ahead. And yeah, it's just like, always check your survey inputs when you're running them through a model, I guess, is like the practical takeaway.
Like everything else, as soon as you use AI, always verify what's coming back at you.
Yes.
In
Yeah.
that sense, yeah, definitely. Okay, fantastic. I think we've got time for one more question here. Some researchers are cautioning against using AI to test AI and make a distinction between verification and validation of models. Could you please comment?
So this is, I think, where we see, for example, in when we were showing the use of AI in hacking, there was some stats around locally hosted LLMs. I think the hackers who are more concerned on things like privacy or control are running or designing their own models and running in local environments. But I agree with the sentiment of this question. That's why there's a lot of like benchmarking attempts that pits different AI tools against one another, like Claude is performing versus, I don't know, ChatGPT, and there are also a lot of other open source frameworks and methods and tools out there. So yeah, I guess it's inevitable that some researchers will be maybe like cautioning, but I think our report findings really tells us that those researchers that doesn't implement or caution are very they represent a smaller portion of the community versus the divide adoption. But what do you think?
Yeah, I think as I say, this the same for you. I think in general, it's there's always going to be a cautious approach to anything to do with AI, but I think it's a smaller proportion that are cautioning against using AI to test AI, because at the end of the day, you want to see how far things can go. So at the same time, you've still got to verify those results. You've still got to verify everything that's coming out of it. So like we were talking before, so I think even if you are testing AI against validation and verification, you still need to understand, what information is coming out of it, and to validate and verify that information yourself, in a human capacity. And that's, I think, coming full circle back to, the bionic hacker. Basically, you're using AI and tools to help augment yourself and your research, but you've still got that human element where you're having to do that verification. I think maybe we've got time for one more question quickly. What are your thoughts on hackbots?
Yeah, so hackbots are, I think, one of the most interesting developments we've seen this year. On the HackerOne platform, we've actually welcomed six of them to the platform. They even have their own leaderboard to see how they're competing against one another, but also just to separate their submissions from individual human testers' submissions. And for the audience, maybe it makes sense to define what hackbots are, but they're pretty much like AI-driven agents that can independently scan and submit vulnerabilities. And our research is showing that almost half of their submissions were valid. So that's a huge step forward for automation or consistency of automation. But when we look at the content of the findings, almost 80% of reports fall into commodity classes like cross-site scripting. So the repetitive pattern-based flaws that we already talked about. And it just, I guess, like my thought on hackbots is that they are great in terms of speed, coverage, and consistency. But they're not there yet to have the depth and contextualization of humans. But we're only in 2025, things change so fast. So maybe like 1 year later, we're going to be talking about those like very complex logic-driven vulnerabilities being found and submitted by hackbots. But yeah, that's where things stand today. But what is this something you hear in your conversations? Do you see hackbots coming into the picture?
Definitely. I think more automation in testing, I think, is definitely coming. There are organizations that try that at the moment, but with various different levels of success. I think they're still in their infancy, or they're need to mature. But I think as AI models evolve, they will advance and evolve as well. And so a lot of the things like the cross-site scripting, like any sort of vulnerability database stuff, hackbots will be able to identify those pretty quickly and then provide the remediation guidance and advice and feed into that whole vulnerability feedback loop. And then, I'm sure at some point in time they will then start being able to do other things, like doing the improper authentication, validation, and the IDOLs and things like that, where they will eventually start being able to spider out into those areas. But I think, they have to mature into that vulnerability space. But I definitely can see it coming, because at the end of the day, a lot of it is basically just throwing lots of different code at a particular target and seeing what sticks. And if you can do that at a really quick speed, and then basically be able to validate those results quite quickly, which the hackbot, can do, to be able to then populate into a functional database. So yeah, I do believe that that's there is a place for them, and they will start maturing and becoming more prevalent in organizations. So
So
I
actually,
oh, sorry.
before we wrap
Yes.
up, I saw something. I think the team has already answered, but Nancy, I can share the slides with you. You can give credit. A lot of the data we covered today is also in the report. We're going to share it in the link. I think in our follow-ups. But yeah, I'll be reaching out to. I'll find your email and make sure you have the slides for reference. Sorry.
Yeah,
Go ahead, Adam.
that's all right. Thanks, Naz. I was going to say, yes, it's definitely going to be available. Look out for emails that will basically have the link to the report in itself and also the slides and the on-demand webinar as well. So I'm just going to finish there. So I'm going to say thank you very much to Naz. That's been fantastic and fascinating. And me doing research on the report as well, I've learned a lot about AI and the use of AI in organizations and how it's going at the moment. And for all the attendees, thank you very much for attending and goodbye.
Thank you so much. Have a good day. And thanks, Adam, for the conversation. Goodbye, everyone.